This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The National LGBTI Health Alliance held its 8th conference, Health in Difference 2013, Our Bodies, Our Minds, in Melbourne in April 2013. Joy 94.9, Australia's only radio station for our diverse communities, is proud to partner with the Alliance to bring you this recording of the 2013 conference.
Welcome everybody to the final and closing plenary of Health in Difference 2013. Joining me here is Warren Talbot, the General Manager of the National LGBTI Health Alliance. Now we will hear from the rapporteurs, as listed on the slide, and we'll start with Corey Earlham.
Good afternoon, camp and theatre types, because that's what it was called back in the day, we learnt from Vows Cafe. We learnt that the historical discrimination and life experiences of a range of people still leads to fear in older LGBTI people today. We learnt that there is money available. There is a strategy, there's funding linked back, and there's a lot of change going on inside the sector, both ours and the mainstream sector. It's the first time that LGBTI health issues have been policy framework led. It's the first time that we've actually had policy before decades of trying to get somebody to do something. And it's making a difference. It's a world first to have a strategy, and it's a world first to have legislation that actually says the words lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex. So what's it all mean for us? It means that coming up, we've got a couple of things to keep our eye on around the country. We've got community visitor schemes in the pipeline, hopefully happening soon. We're going to see more and more providers doing inclusive things. This is going to be really challenging for us as a sector because they're going to come knocking on our doors on our time to try and help them do that. We need to make sure that we're resourced to be able to do that. We're going to see more innovative things. We heard about the Matrix Guild, about their housing project and how that's making an impact on a small scale, but in a really big way. So there's lots of things happening in ageing, and thanks everybody who made the presentations and who attended. A lot of them were standing room only. Cheers.
Thank you, Corey. And now we hear from Matari.
Thanks. I have to say, look, I'm feeling a little bit weary at the end of the conference, and I'm not sure I have too many words left. I've spoken quite a bit. In the mental health stream, we've similarly seen for the first time this unprecedented context where policy has led to money. It's been unprecedented, particularly in Victoria, where the government and also at a Commonwealth level have invested in both mainstream and LGBTI specialist community organisations to really focus on mental health and suicide prevention. So there's been a whole variety of things happening, and it's kind of hugely energising, I suppose, to see the small scale through to some of the macro level things that are going on. In terms of some reflections within that and the lessons, although it's a really exciting time, we've got a lot of work to do, and there's I guess, disparities, as has been discussed over the conference. We're doing really well in some parts of the rainbow, but there are other parts where we probably need to start thinking about investing to be more selective, I suppose, in helping ensure that the gap between, particularly the T and the I and the B, doesn't just continue to widen. So as we invest in doing universal work, how can we make sure that we don't just bring everyone or bring the G and the L up to here while these people just incrementally move a bit as well? Let's go from a place from inclusion. It's been also really wonderful to see people talking about mental health across the spectrum. So right downstream at the care end, making sure people can access high quality and inclusive care. And it's been nice to see so many mainstream providers here talking about how they're working to be more inclusive, and likewise building the capacity of LGBTI organisations to deliver better quality mental health and suicide prevention work. The leadership that the LGBTI Health Alliance has given and the framework within MindArt has been really exciting to see come to fruition in phase two. The next steps, I suppose, will be a telling time to see how some of these different frameworks that we're working on come to fruition and what kind of practical impact on the ground that has. The intersections between mental health and other areas of health have also been raised and were really important. A number of people spoke about the intersections with alcohol and other drugs in particular, and I think it's important that we keep that in mind. The parallels also in at a social determinants level, looking at discrimination and not forgetting the intersections with race-based discrimination and the lessons there. And asking, importantly, the right questions in terms of data collection. This isn't just important from a mainstream perspective, but also within our own communities. I think we can all do better to ask the right questions and not further invisibilize those communities who have been left behind before. We need to baseline our work. We need to be able to document our progress. And data is central to not just articulating it a rationale or an evidence for action, but seeing whether the actions that we do take make a difference. So it's a really, really exciting time, and I've been hugely energised and inspired by the things that I've heard and the people who I've met, as well as reconnecting with the people I already had known. And yeah, I wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Atari. And now it's Philomena Horsley.
Doing LGBTI differently, and I think the opening plenary set us up to look at it in terms of different from what, from the history where we've come from. And I think we've heard some fantastic stories through plenaries and through our stream in particular as well, that talk about the past, the present, and hopefully the future. So greater visibility of older LGBTI people in our session and across the conference brings history back to us. And it makes it alive for us, some of us again, and it makes it alive for some people in the room in a very new way who have not experienced those times. And I think I was reminded by what an asset older LGBTI people are to us. And also the message that came through is what an asset we are collectively to society. Just on the second slide, one of the things we talked about was measuring progress. And through our stream and the plenary, a number of things were discussed in terms of paradigms and scales, much reference to changing. Whereas, and I kind of don't like the lines. I'm a 1970s women's liberationist. We're much more organic. We're much more, you know. So I kind of reconstructed really badly because I'm not really great at PowerPoint. The sense of oscillation and reflection that comes through. People that we're working with, that we're training, they're changing, they go forward but they go back, but we also go forward and go back in our thinking, in our learning and in our stories. So in terms of incorporating our history and our hopes for the future and our sense of the past, as well as moving forward the people we're working with through the kind of changes, but also recognising it's an organic process of movement and change. We certainly talked, as the other streams did, around the importance of structural inequalities, particularly in relation to gender and transgender. Social determinants of health, Jed Horner talked about the elephant in the room of social determinants of health in terms of general research out there and how we get sexual orientation in that broader national research and state-based research program, but also within our own work. We can't lose sight of that as well. In terms of policies and programs and practice, the challenges in specific health areas such as drugs and alcohol have been mentioned. So moving beyond the figures to better understanding of the complex ways that they both have supported community cohesion, and that's certainly true of the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, and the celebrations we had then, but also the suppression and the exacerbation of individual damage that they've created in our communities. And the fact that funding for specific programs is still so rare. We talked about visual representations in terms of health promotion and campaigning and the ways they've changed. So how they are symbols of the progress we've made in terms of the representations we use in our own health promotion as well as how we're represented by other organisations such as Beyond Blue, the aid they are to storytelling, which has come up as a theme throughout this conference, the importance of storytelling, and the reminders of the oppositions we still face. So in one of the sessions we heard about the Rip and Roll program in Queensland and the opposition that was created by Christian groups, and that reminded me of the 1980s and the poster of the two boys kissing. So what goes around comes around. For those of you who can remember Two Boys Kissing, yep, good, some oldies like me in the room. We talked about whole of organisation change, you know, community care, city councils, the inclusive practice that is starting to be embedded through, you know, inclusive how-to training programs and the Rainbow Tick. Strategies that still require nuance, such as rural and regional areas, which have different issues, similar but also really different issues, and there are real challenges there, as there are with large multi-sided organisations that are taking on the challenge of inclusive practice. So it's not just, you know, a little community health centre here, it's an organisation of 1,000 or 3,000 staff. How do you bring that in across the whole area? And whole of state approaches, whether it's GLHV's approach, you know, the Be Proud coalition in Tasmania and so on, bringing in that whole of state thing is a whole other area in itself. Where to? Challenges for us and challenges for them out there, the people who are in the mainstream that we're working with, but also on. So I think this conference in our stream in particular highlighted some of the gaps that are more visible, particularly in research, so especially intersex, trans and bisexual research. You know, we've got minimal data, we have very little of the stories, and the data we have is not robust enough. So that whole area of research is really in need of resourcing, supporting and promoting and arguing for. We are more conscious of the gaps that in the research that we also do. And the fact that there's more understanding required beyond the statistics, you know, context, diversities, intersections between ethnicity, disability, race, all those kind of differences that exist within that we have very little data on. They're the challenges, I think, in their research area. A constant thing through the conference in our stream, putting gender back on the agenda, is a really important thing. All of us need to put our gender lens on and remind ourselves of the interconnections between sex, sexuality, and gender. Alliances emerging, new alliances emerging within the room, but within the organisations that you represent or the communities you represent. The renewing of alliances, the realigning of alliances, and the separation in some ways, creating new ways of debate within us and between us in terms of the groups that we identify with. Warren posed the question, in 10 years, will LGBTI itself as a notion survive? Will it break apart? Will it form anew in separate, more specific areas like a separate aged care kind of or national organisation, LGBTI? Those kinds of questions I think we'll be talking about in 2 years' time specifically. And I was more reminded of my, you know, when I was at the first Health Indifference in 1996, it was historic because we got together to share, to debate and argue. I noticed not a lot of arguing. We were really nice to each other all through the conference, you know. It's great, great, but, you know, a bit of debate. So that was historic because we got together, mainly gay and lesbian people. What's historic about this eighth conference, I think, is to be at a conference where transgender and intersex provide the light bulb moments. Particularly, I found light bulb moments for me, and I think for many of you in the room. This is an historic occasion, this conference, in terms of the presence and visibility. And I'll finish. On the issue around law reform, I was re-reminded this. We had 100 pieces of legislation in the last 10 years that have gone through supporting specifically, well, not specifically, but particularly LGB, but so much more to do in terms of intersex and transgender. So much more in terms of not only the change, but the implementation of the change. And finally, I'll finish with a bit of a razz. In the spirit of 1996, one of the survivors of 1996 and debate and provocation, reading Germaine Greer's Age article today, it's great, it's really great that people who wanted marriage equality have got marriage equality. I've always been one of those who went, meh. She actually put it out to us and said, in a sane world, heterosexuals would be demanding the rationalisation of marriage, or better still, its abolition. So I'm feeling at this conference... At this conference, we've had the landmark thing of New Zealand, but I'm looking forward in the next 10 years So, okay, we get equality. Now can we just bloody abolish the institution of marriage? Thank you.
Thank you, Philomena. I'll take that as not a recommendation at this stage. Gina.
So I was in the intersex and trans and gender diverse stream, and I'd like to thank the fabulous speakers. We had a really good group of speakers in that stream. What came out of that that I noticed most of all was that the inclusion of intersex, trans and gender diversity has moved light years since the last HID conference in 2010, only 3 years ago. But bisexual, the B in LGBTI, remains by and large unincluded and invisible. And I think that over the next little while is something we need to look at. The community cooperation, collaboration and cohesion is critical to all of our needs, but more widely there needs to be a greater collaboration with providers of every kind of service, not only health, but also in areas like law, policing and education. The collaboration that goes on, you know, within these walls is wonderful, and that's what we came here for. But somehow or other, there's a lot of other people out there that it would be really, really nice to see as faces in the mob. That the use of inclusive language and really using words like intersex, trans, gender diversity, gender queer is a critical thing, a part of making those things known to the wider community. So don't LGBTI, say bisexual, say intersex, say gay, say lesbian, so use the words. And then with the queries, put some clothes on them, explain them out, and be knowledgeable about those things, be knowledgeable about all the parts of LGBTI. The other thing was that the Health Indifference Conference demonstrates once again there's no substitute for face-to-face meetings in building alliances, collaborations, great working relationships, and fabulous friends. Thanks.
Thank you, Gina. And now, Evie.
Hello, everyone. It's almost over. Oh my God. I'm very, very exhausted. Yes, I was covering cultural determinants of health and well-being, and one could guess what that actually meant. It meant for a whole pile of different topics, from HIV to Indigenous health issues to culturally linguistically diverse health issues to lesbian health issues. It pretty much had a bit of everything in it. It was incredibly broad. I guess some of the key themes that came out of that that really came to me was that homophobia was still quite, and homophobia and stigma was still very much a part of our lives, and it still affected us quite heavily. And I guess there was a lot of data that came back saying, particularly on the street, when on the street, homophobia is affecting us the most. And I guess, you know, some of the stuff that came out of that was, you know, a little bit of the visibility of minority groups within minority groups. And I guess, you know, I only went to one presentation in the whole time that actually talked about bisexual health. And, you know, they said that bisexual health had the highest, bisexual identified people had the highest unreported health issues out of all the LGBT combined, which I thought was quite big. And then I heard another one that really hit me home was the visibility of lesbian violence, which, you know, how often do you hear of lesbians or people, violence committed against lesbians? And, you know, you hear of trans women being beaten, you hear of gay men assault and violence, but lesbian violence is incredibly unreported, and that really hit home to me from that part. But I guess some of the positive stuff that I've been seeing in the presentations has been this shift to away from facts and figures as such and moving into telling our stories. Really like hearing like different stories from some of my Indigenous co-workers to people from multicultural groups, and just seeing people around me just go, oh my God, that's the first time I've heard someone else share that story. That really just connects with me. I can really understand what's going on. Like I feel like I'm, you know, just hearing that story just made me feel less alone in this world. And I think, if anything, in this conference, it's almost like, I feel like we're having maybe a bit of a cultural change towards, you know, communicating some of our struggles through the use of storytelling and perhaps away so much from just academia all the time. So that's what really came across to me in the plenary. And also within these stories, I guess, came up a lot of stuff about what these stories were actually doing, and it was actually helping people, you know, ground themselves, and the activities that the stories that developed from developed strength that helped build resilience, which is, I think, one of the best things against homophobia, and one of the things we've got to perhaps work forward on is that stuff about, you know, building that resilience, being stronger within ourselves, and believing and celebrating ourselves. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you, Evie. And now we'll hear from Sean.
So I attended the Families and Young People stream, and this stream really explored two environments, the school and then also a focus on families and partnerships. The first half of the stream, as I said, dealt heavily with projects and activities in the school environment and the lives of young people in other contexts. In this section, what came through very strongly is that the validation of the projects and highlighting the importance of the issues is key to facilitating access to getting into the school environment to be able to implement the project. A number of things were highlighted, a suite of key things really that facilitated access, and some of these things were the stamp of approval of governmental departments helps to demonstrate the authoritative support for the project or what you're trying to do. The school support, including the school support around including the project in the school environment, despite possible negative reactions, whether it be parents complaining or whatever else, what was specifically discussed was how do you work with those key gatekeepers who have the power to let you in or keep you out, such as principals, for example. We also talked about how existing policies within the school environment can often play a great role in getting you in. And finally, it was talked about how teacher professional development on how to effectively deliver inclusive health and relationship education when they're a component of what you're doing is very important to get them on side and to increase their confidence to deliver the project. And then the group discussed how to manage the arguments thrown up against programs and activities around sexuality and gender diversity in schools. And as I said, it was the arguments around what do you do if parents complain, or the community is offended, or young people will be confused or offended by the discussions that they're involved with. And what really came out of that was a discussion and the question of why workers in the area need to defend themselves, ourselves, against a possible handful of complaints when we know the need for these projects and interventions are so great. And so it was highlighted that the most effective way to manage this was to flip it on its head and challenge the people opposing the work to justify and defend not providing support and information for young people who face such negative outcomes that we know are out there, such as poorer mental health outcomes, suicide and self-harm. Another strong theme of the sessions was the need for awareness of the multitude of projects and work that's occurring across the country in schools. And based on the challenges discussed in the area, I suspect that increasing visibility of the breadth of work that's occurring out there and possibly setting up professional or similar networks if they don't already exist. If they do, there's not an awareness that they exist. Doing that would be beneficial in the area. It would support workers with a sense of joint purpose and joint activities, would provide support around challenges inherent in the work, and it would facilitate the sharing of strategies and those sort of key things I talked about. As I said, the second day of the stream talked about families and started by highlighting some very interesting progress in the area of research into families. So reviews of the early research on same-sex parented families suggested that there were no overall differences on well-being for children and same-sex parents. However, recently that view has evolved and authors recognise small but significant differences in areas such as well-being, sexual orientation, gender role behaviour and social relationships, with suggestions that stigma and discrimination may play a significant role in these. Early results, in particular of the Australian study of child health in same-sex families, suggest that the sample of children in that study are roughly similar to the children in the non-same-sex parenting sample, with the exceptions of same-sex parenting children scoring higher on general health and family cohesion. A discussion of the experiences of separated same-sex parented families highlights, just watch this space for an acronym. I'm sure there's going to be an acronym at some point about same-sex parented families or parenting families, if there isn't already. But there was a discussion about how the challenges in that space were around a lack of systemic and legal recognition of the structures of same-sex parenting families, which in the past left some partners without legal rights and recognition regarding child access. We talked about while the laws have changed, a number of people in the session identified that there's still a whole lot of uncertainty and murkiness in the area. And discussions of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex domestic violence highlighted the great range of projects, partnerships and resources that were created or are ongoing in this often under-discussed and taboo area. So overall, the take-home messages for me were that there's a number of challenges and complexities that exist in the environments and the lives of same-sex attracted young people and same-sex partnerships and families. And there's an overwhelming need for certainty and clarity in various areas provided, which would be provided and cleared up by information awareness raising, and also a great use for systemic structures such as policy and procedures that would support individuals, families, and work. However, I think a great opportunity presents itself in the near future with bodies of new research on the horizon to inform priorities and projects, great opportunities to form networks and utilise existing projects and resources in new ways and in new areas. So I think there's a lot of exciting things on the horizon for this area. Thank you.
We're now on to reviewing some, or not reviewing, looking at some recommendations. We've received 16 recommendations under 5 headings. Now, we don't have time to discuss these recommendations. What I'm going to ask you to do is to vote on them. If it's more than a majority, those recommendations will then be processed through the Alliance. The heading for the first recommendation is National Research Methods Project, and it is as on that sheet. To note, the National LGBTI Health Alliance's discussion paper titled LGBTI Data, Developing an Evidence-Informed Environment for LGBTI Health Policy, and commends the Alliance for developing awareness of these important issues. Is everybody in favour of that recommendation? You got those numbers, didn't you, Warren?
Yes, I did. I saw the votes against.
Recommendation 2, to note the importance of accurate, culturally appropriate data collection of LGBTI people, notwithstanding the various challenges uniquely involved in the collection of individual sex, gender, and sexual orientation. Those in favour? Thank you. 3, to call on the Australian Government, and in particular the Minister for Health, the Honourable Tanya Plibersek, to note the paper and its recommendations. Thank you. 4, to urge the Australian Government to fund a national sex, gender and sexual orientation research methods project as a matter of priority. Thank you. The next heading is Federal LGBTI Ageing and Aged Care Anti-Discrimination. That the conference resolves to commend the Australian Government and the Minister for Ageing, the Honourable Mark Butler MP, for the development of its national LGBTI ageing and aged care strategy. And 2, to welcome the introduction of protections for LGBTI people on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, and intersex status in federal anti-discrimination laws. Thank you. And 3, To note, the Attorney General confirmed at his press conference on the 20th of March this year that it remains government policy to prevent older LGBTI people from being lawfully discriminated against by aged care providers, including religiously run providers. Thank you. 4. To commend ageing and aged care providers for their stated inclusive policies of providing non-discriminatory services to LGBTI people, and notes specifically Catholic Health Australia, Anglicare Australia, and Uniting Care Australia for their publicly stated policy positions in this regard. Thank you. And 5. To note the significant fear and concerns held by older LGBTI people that ageing and aged care services may continue to discriminate towards them without the protections afforded to them by laws such as anti-discrimination laws. Thank you. 6. To call on the Australian Government to ensure legislation passes before the Parliament rises in June, to legislate for its stated policy objectives by preventing lawful discrimination by aged care providers against people on the basis of their sexual orientation, gender identity, or intersex status. Thank you. The next heading is communications. That the conference supports the development of a communication and engagement strategy for members at the state territory level. Thank you. Background for this recommendation. Smoking is a major cause of morbidity and mortality. Smoking prevalence within the LGBTI community is significantly higher than the broader community. There is little attention paid to the issue of smoking and tobacco control in the LGBTI community. Recommendation 1. The LGBTI Health Alliance works to increase awareness of smoking as an important health issue. Thank you. 2. The Alliance initiates meaningful dialogue with smoking control agencies. Thank you. And 3. The LGBTI Health Alliance lobbies to have LGBTI populations identified in national tobacco control strategies as a priority population. Thank you. And the final heading is intersex, that the conference rejects the use of psychosocial measures as a rationale for the normalisation of people with intersex bodies.
Without their consent.
Sorry?
The last line, sorry. Without their consent.
Without their consent. And my confusion is because I had 2 copies of that one. Thank you very much. There's not a method to my filing. We have covered a lot of ground in the last 2.5 days. We've done it together with a positive approach, a great mutual respect for our work, goals and achievements. And we've had a good time. Thank you to the rapporteurs for taking this role and drawing our attention to the key issues in LGBTI health and wellbeing, from suicide prevention to aged care to programs for young people and particular health challenges facing intersex, trans and gender diverse people. We will all have our own highlights. For me, several events stand out. First, the new National Teleweb Counselling Project, as outlined by Rebecca Reynolds yesterday. Some of these... Some of these services have been running for 40 years. It is a historic opportunity for the 5 services to work together and with the Alliance take the services to a new dimension. Second, the launch of the Rainbow Tick by our conference partner Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria. With national accreditation, this provides wide-ranging opportunities for us in every state and territory. Highlights for my own professional learning have come from the outstanding plenary presentations and the diversity of both the concurrent sessions and the questions put at those. Many people contributed to the success of HID 2013. Without you, our participants, HID would not happen. We have travelled from every part of Australia, including the Tiwi Islands, as well as New Zealand and the United States. Please give yourself a round of applause. We have had over 100 speakers and panellists at the conference. This is a very high level of participation. The conference working group and committees met regularly on a voluntary basis over nearly 2 years to make the conference happen. The working group and committees often have to make the difficult decisions which result in a great program, as we have appreciated. Our professional conference organisers, ASHAM, have attended to the many details often taking place behind the scenes. They have done so efficiently, often keeping us on track, on time, on budget. This is no small achievement. Thank you to Amanda Berg and the ASHAM team. Our conference sponsors made an extremely important contribution. By now, you know who you are, and we know who you are. Finally, I want to thank the Alliance staff team for their contribution. I'm sure the other staff will join me in especially thanking Andrew Little, who has been the Health Indifference Project Officer. Where are you, Andrew? Oh, good. Could you please come up here? Right up. Thank you very much, Andrew. And I have to read what I have to say about you. At all times, including when under lots of competing pressures and deadlines, Andrew has displayed an outstanding degree of courtesy, consideration, encouragement, incredible attention to detail, and all with a quiet sense of good humour. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you very much. And I also want to give this to Warren Talbot, because he did. The last HID was held 3 years ago in 2010. I'm already looking to the future and your participation and support of the ninth Health Indifference 2015. The Alliance already has a number of roundtables and meetings planned for 2014 in our health priority areas. Health Indifference 2015 will enable all of us to come together as we have in the past 3 days. The board is keen to hear your views on that, including the best city for the conference. Mexico! You will receive an online evaluation early next week, and I severely encourage you to complete it and help shape the next conference. As Telstra says, we take your feedback very seriously, as will the next Health Indifference Working Group. That brings Health Indifference 2013 to an end. The Alliance looks forward to working with you and to your participation in Health Indifference 2015. Thank you.
Cheers. Cheers. Cheers.
You have been listening to a recording from the Health Indifference 2013 conference held in Melbourne in April 2013. For more information about the National LGBTI Health Alliance, head to lgbtihealth.org.au. And for more information on Joy 94.9, Australia's only radio station for our diverse communities, explore joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.